You're listening to Health Lifelines, a podcast brought to you by The Lifeguard Approach, your trusted source for insights, solutions, and training that empower you to become a lifeguard for your patient's health and well-being.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is not a mistake. It is me, Rebecca St. James. I am here as the guest host of Chris Duvall's podcast, the Health Lifeline podcast. And I am hosting today because our guest is the one and only Chris Duvall. Hey there.
Good morning, or it's good afternoon, I guess, where you are.
That's true. It is. So thanks for letting me, be your guest host today. It's truly an honor. And I'm excited to talk about the last 25 years of growth in your hygiene career. Because it is unique, it is exceptional, and in my opinion, it's really what we should be striving for. So if you're ready, let's just jump right in and let's talk about it.
All right, let's go. Let's do it.
Let's go. All right, so when you look back at the last 25 years, what did being a hygienist mean to you, and what does it mean to you now?
Well, when I look back at the beginning of those 25 years, it was just about doing my job right as a hygienist, cleaning teeth and educating patients. And that changed. Particularly, it changed because I had quit my job because I was severely burned out, but I had to go back to work. And I decided to position myself with someone that had a very different view of patient care. And his name's Dr. Brian McKay. He was in Seattle where I was. And so I decided my goal was I'm going to position myself with him and get a job as his hygienist. And so what happened in the first week of working there literally changed the course of my life, and it changed the course of our patients' lives. Because he took me to lunch and he said, this isn't what he said, but this is what I heard.
Okay. Right.
I heard him say to me, I want you to paint a much larger canvas of who you could be for our patients.
Okay.
And I'll give you continuing education, the technology that you need, and a personal coach. Let's see what you can do. And that set me off on a course because I love a challenge. I believe that he believed in my potential of what I could do.
Right.
And so after that time, my position as a hygienist meant to me that it all became about saving lives and advocating for wellness, teaching patients how to save their own lives, how to advocate for themselves, how to speak up and ask for help. And that process literally changed the trajectory of patients' lives through very intentional, compassionate care that I was able to provide for them.
And for anyone that hasn't heard it, Dr. McKay, you did a podcast episode with him, and we'll include that in the meeting notes so people can hear that.
I'd encourage you to listen to it because it literally, that philosophy of care of how he wanted patients treated is what spurred the growth in me. And one thing I want you to know is you don't have to have a doctor that gives you that challenge that helps you spur that growth in your own career. You can do it yourself. And sometime I'd like to have a discussion about that, about how you can do that. So
yeah, we should do that. So Dr. McKay comes through and he lays the groundwork just to kind of spur you on and opens the door and says, this is, imagine what it could be. So now you're within that bubble. Was there a moment or a patient that caused you, within that world to suddenly shift from traditional hygiene as we know it to becoming what you are now, which is an architect of change?
Well, there was one particular moment, but it was when I was in hygiene school and I remembered it. And I had lost sight of the big picture at that moment. But I had, well, one of my first patients in hygiene school was my husband's grandfather. And I found out what, well, I found what turned out to be oral cancer on him. And at that moment, everything changed for me as far as doing an oral cancer screening. I knew I had the responsibility to do more because I knew that every person that sat in my chair has someone that loves them as much as I loved Gary's grandfather. And so I just put myself in the position of one of their family members saying to me, "Did you do an oral cancer screening on my loved one? If not, why?" That's so important.
Yeah.
So that's what spurred me on. I made the decision there that I would always do an oral cancer screening on a patient that sat in my chair, always. And I can honestly say I have done that without fail over my, 50-year career. So that made an impact on me, and I remembered that event, and I had started asking new questions when I started working with Dr. McKay, and I found that the answers were not keeping up with traditional hygiene, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I was learning more about oral systemic health, and traditional hygiene didn't answer those questions. So I decided at that time that I was going to become that architect of change that was going to change how I took care of patients. And I was going to be focused on saving lives instead of the tradition of, oh, you got to get your teeth clean every 6 months. So that's really what spurred me on to make the change.
And there's two things that you hit on in there that I want to make sure we cover. And one is about the questions you ask. So I want to put that over here for now, because the other, and it's so subtle, but the way that you position it, that if you think about it, if that's anyone's loved one and they come up to you and say, "Did you do that?" To me, that speaks volumes and shows your compassion, because your whole viewpoint changed and it became a lens of compassion. And compassion, something I often hear you talk about, in the work that we do together, as being your superpower. So when did you realize, or was it at that moment that you realized that this whole clinical skill that you've learned in school just wasn't enough?
Well, it was a combination of things. Number one, to have the freedom and the commandment from Dr. McKay to approach patient health differently. But more importantly, I think what happened in my early years, by the time I had turned 18, I had lost two brothers and my father had died. And that shifted me totally out of the usual attitude about life as you're growing up. I, unbeknownst to me, and I realized it after I had started work with Dr. McKay, I became at that time. When I was 18 or so, I became a risk management warrior for my family because two of my brothers died in childhood accidents that could have been prevented, but it just grew in me this desire because loss of someone is so painful that I wanted to be that person in the family that became that risk management warrior. My sister says, "Oh, we love to go places with you because you do all the worrying for us." And I want to make people, I want to make it clear to people, I'm not a worrier, but I will do whatever I can to manage risks. And so I shifted that after I became much more aware and with the way that Dr. McKay talked to me, that I realized that becoming a risk management warrior was my key to helping patients get healthy. And that's all he wanted. He wanted patients to come back from ReCare healthy without any bleeding. And so I became that risk management warrior for them. And I looked for what their risks were and then how I could help them advocate for themselves to dissolve those risks. And the other thing that I have that happened for me as I worked in that environment is that I also became a values hunter.
A values hunter, what's that?
Well, you see, I became a values hunter for myself and my family because of the loss that I had been through, or we had been through. And so when I look at what we know about people's risks of heart disease and diabetes and cancer and whatever, that became my clue to how I could help them start advocating for themselves, like I did for my family, in that I asked them, I wanted to know what they valued. So I asked the question as they walked back to my operatory, I'd ask them, tell me about something great in your life. And I did that to find out what they valued, because somebody will tell me something great in their life. To me, that means this is something I have to live for. And so I could superimpose those values over their risks. And I could say to them, because you told me you have your first grandchild being born and that you can hardly wait to watch this grandchild grow up, I want to help assure that you're here and healthy and have a long health span to watch that child grow.
I
So,
love that.
and when you present a risk factor or a recommendation of treatment to someone in that manner, it changes the whole picture, in my opinion.
Right.
So I was able to really, by asking that question, tell me about something great in your life. And then before that, asking them, tell me what you want for yourself. Because all patients want one of two things. They either want to move toward the benefit of health, or they want to move away from the consequences of disease. And how we treat them clinically is exactly the same, but our message to them and how we talk to them is totally different.
Right.
So.
Well, let's talk about that for a second because, you've even had to coach me with some of the things we've worked on to the way I phrase questions. And not only do you ask value questions, but you don't ask the same traditional hygiene questions either.
No.
You often you don't do yes, no, you do these open-ended ones. And so what's another example of an old question that, all hygienists ask, you're going through your checklist versus the way you position it now.
Okay, let me preframe that, what you asked me to talk about, with my belief is that one of the main reasons I gave up on traditional hygiene was that when I started asking new and better questions, what I found out was that traditional hygiene wasn't keeping up.
Okay, so you're talking more like a, are you, or is this getting into that comparison of a hygiene that de hygienist that delivers versus a hygienist that leads, or is this okay?
But essentially, I'll give you an example. Questions
Okay.
hygienists always say, how often do you brush and floss? Are you
Right.
flossing? What other things are you using to keep your mouth clean? I don't care about compliance questions. And that's what those kind of questions are. What I want to know, and the questions that I have started asking in the past years is, Tell me about when your gums bleed, because that takes you and your patient from talking about compliance to a question that starts a conversation about systemic health. Do you see the difference?
I do actually. I
Yeah.
do.
It's a huge difference. Because how do you go from talking about how often do you brush and floss to the fact that you're recommending some periodontal therapy or some other type of therapy to manage that patient's risk? It just makes this a much easier and more acceptable conversation to approach the patient from, we're going to want to manage your risks and let's figure out what you value enough to make some changes and to make some investment in yourself.
Right, because if they don't value it, they're not going to put forth the effort.
Right. But when the patients have those oral systemic conversations about what links what's going in their on in their mouth and how often and when their gums bleed to their heart health and diabetes risk and heart attack and stroke risk, that creates new conversations. And to me, that is what I mean by traditional hygiene wasn't keeping up with the answers that I was
Got
getting.
it.
So,
Got it. So, and let's take a step back just for a moment. When exactly did your understanding of this oral systemic connection evolve?
probably really started getting an understanding. See, when I went to work for Dr. McKay, it was 2000. And so by 2003, 2004, there were things developing in the science world that was changing how we needed to approach our patients' care. And let me tell you one other thing.
Yeah.
What happened to me when I quit my job because I was burned out? I actually know now today that was moral injury,
Oh.
not burnout. There is a huge difference between moral injury and burnout. Burnout is something that, you can go away to Bali and take a month's worth of yoga classes and come back and feel refreshed.
Right.
Moral injury wounds the sufferer much deeper than that because it involves the understanding of a person that how they're taking care of patients is not how they would prefer to do it. But due to practice constraints, insurance constraints, attitudes of patients, your own limiting beliefs, that's what moral injury is, because that keeps you from taking care of the patients and really changing the trajectory in the course of patients' lives and the course of your career. That's what gets in the way of that.
Do
So,
you think that's at the base of, and I this is opinion, I get that. Do you think that's what's the underlying issue right now with the high numbers in hygienist burnout, as it's being called?
absolutely. I would bet money on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you see, when you change your outlook and your beliefs, I mean, I developed the belief that I could help everyone in some way or another. And I didn't care how they showed up and how they decided to, approach me and what I was going to do with them. There was a way around them to get to their deep core beliefs of what they wanted for themselves. And that was the first thing that I shifted was Dr. McKay helped me understand that at that practice there, we practice wants dentistry.
Once.
And it is about, we ask the patients, tell me about what you want for yourself. If I had to go in and work with a patient and I didn't know what that patient wanted for themselves, you might as well put a 3-inch piece of duct tape over my mouth because I wouldn't know how to talk. I wouldn't know how to have a conversation with them because I refuse to make assumptions about what people want for themselves. I despise that when somebody does that to me, when they assume what they think I want for my health and wellness.
Right.
Just ask me and I'll
And
tell you.
and I think, we've talked about this on other podcasts, that I think that's a huge shift that we are seeing in American healthcare, at least in the US, that it's suddenly the patients are starting to rally and advocate for themselves. And, I even do it in my own health. Yes, I realize you went to medical school, you're the expert. However, this is my body. So let's do this together. And I've noticed the huge, huge growth in my own health just by doing that, by having those conversations. And I know that some hygienists we've spoken to get nervous about that because they think, oh, wow, now it's going to impact the time that I have with this patient. But that's not really the case, is it?
No, you see, behind all of this was my belief that every person that sat in my chair is in what I call the danger zone.
Okay.
So the first times I see them, I would have some challenges and work to do to get them shifted from the danger zone into the safety zone, because that's where I believe that they wanted to live from what they told me, no matter whether they were moving towards health or away from disease. And so I did and talked to patients in a way that if we leave this bleeding go and not address it, here are the consequences that can happen. And we'd talk about sometimes we would talk about their parents' health. Tell me about it. Are your mother and father alive? No, they died early. What happened to them? Well, my dad had a heart attack at 55. So a lot of this stuff, what goes on in families can continue to go on for generations. So we just started talking about what they wanted, and here's how we could shift you out of that danger zone. Here's what I recommend that we do, and here's how we can get you living into the safety zone as soon as possible, and have you come back for recare still in that safety zone.
Right, which is huge. That's
Yes, absolutely.
huge for the patient and the practice, both.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And for me particularly, I had never been in those last 25 years so inspired about hygiene that I was in those last 25 years. And I still am. And that's why I'm still out here continuing to talk about it, because it made such a difference in me and, more importantly, in the patient. When you can teach a patient how to stand up and start asking questions. I mean, patients don't think that they're in a place when they come in and get their teeth cleaned to ask questions.
Exactly, right? We all know the drill. We're going to come in, we're going to say, sure, I floss, when we always give them like half of the truth about all of that. Do a little polish. The dentist is going to spend maybe 5 minutes with you and you're out. We all know the drill. We're trained.
Yes. And what I focused on was letting my patients know, every single one of them, that I would be excited to partner with them, because I wanted them to learn how to ask those important questions and be thinking about that when they're on their way back in for a hygiene appointment than, oh, I know she's going to ask me if I brushed or flossed, and
Exactly.
I'm flossing, but I did last night. So does that
Does that count, right? We all do the last minute floss. Ah. And so when you're creating these self-advocates, I would think that also really is a game changer on their end, because now it's not suddenly, ugh, I'm going in to get scraped. This is a pain. It's, I'm going to go talk to Chris and my dentist and take another step further in my health journey. Or I'm going to go tell them how much better I feel because we've done XYZ. I think it would change the dynamic totally.
Oh, It does. It does. And it's so rewarding on both sides of that. I mean, really, I think the purpose of a hygienist nowadays should be to help patients learn how to self-advocate.
I think that's huge. I think they
Yeah.
did. And I'd go a step further. I would just say for everyone in medical school, out of medical school, if you're any medical provider of any kind, self-advocate, partner with your patients, says the Lord.
Yeah. And I wrote a thing, a blog with Amy Donine, the Heart Attack and Stroke Prevention Clinic, or the Bale-Donine method. And I talked about, I think there's four steps in there of how to get your dental hygienist and your dentist to partner with you. I put that on the responsibility of the patient to ask their hygienist to partner with them to help them get what they want for themselves. You're listening to Health Lifelines, a podcast brought to you by the Lifeguard Approach, your trusted source for insights, solutions, and training that empower you to become a lifeguard for your patients' health and well-being. This episode is just a taste of the strategies and stories we will share to help you and your patients live longer, healthier lives. If you're enjoying the content, make sure to hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. As a reminder, this podcast and the opinions expressed here are not a medical diagnosis. And don't forget to explore our additional resources, tools, exclusive content, courses, and coaching solutions from the Lifeguard Approach by visiting our website at thelifeguardapproach.com. And now let's jump back into today's episode.
Agree, it is our job to ask. But what's nice, what at least I'm experiencing, and I think others are, is now suddenly when we ask these questions, you're not getting this, I know everything, you just do what I say. You're suddenly getting these responses from providers. I don't know, I'll look it up, or ooh, I read this article, or oh, let's try this on you, or tell me more what you want, kind of like you were saying with your questions. And it's interesting to be a patient in this era and watch this shift happen. So I would love to see it in dentistry as well. It needs it.
Yeah.
So, all right.
And
Oh, right.
it all comes down to compassion, in my view.
Okay.
That, a lot of people are talking today about, well, I'm empathetic, I'm an empath, and that is awesome. But I think what we need more in this world is more compassion
Yeah.
on a moment by moment basis with our patients. And compassion for ourselves. You
Yes.
have compassion for ourselves, and I think that's part of the problem with staffing in dentistry today. But I can't begin to tell you how impactful asking new and better questions is
Simple
when it comes
shift.
to your patient. Yeah.
Such a simple shift.
And I love tell me about questions, not yet. Everybody talks about don't ask open-ended questions, which I totally agree with, but I love the tell me about questions because that gets the patient talking about what the reality is in their life and then how you can help them shift that.
Yeah, and I like that too. And I believe you've got a blog that's got three questions in it. We'll put that in the show notes too, because that'll just give everybody, a little more insight into how to do this.
Sure.
So as you're going through this process, how do you help patients understand that these early screenings and preventions aren't optional, that these should be, life-saving additions to every one of their dental visits?
Well, once you understand the science, about the same time I was coming into view of the danger zone, the safety zone, and really helping patients create health and wellness. Let me back up a minute. Before that time, I had lost what I call my impact and influence with patients because what I was telling them to do was not creating the kind of change that I wanted to see. And that's primarily why I gave up on tradition. But at this time, we were coming into knowledge about how pathogens impacted inflammation and infection, both orally and systemically. We were coming into knowledge about airway issues and sleep-disordered breathing. And all of this was driving the information that was being made available to us to utilize for change. And it was the stuff that kept me stuck in tradition was I wasn't applying the new science to patients.
Got it.
That's what I mean by traditional hygiene wasn't keeping up. It didn't come out equal to when I was seeing these systemic effects, that the questions that I was asking and the information I was helping patients understand didn't jive with tradition. So something had to change. And that change had to begin with me, not with the patient, not with the doctor, not with the insurance companies, because I was going to help patients lengthen their health span to help them enjoy the things in life that they valued, no matter what the insurance said to me, whether I could or couldn't do that. I don't care what insurance says, because I know how to relate to a patient in a way that will help them stand up and say, I value that. So I'm going to do it whether or not my insurance helps me or not.
And I think, and again, I have a little insider info on this, which is why I'm posing the question this way. In my opinion, I think that's why we're seeing such a huge shift in dentistry to being private pay, no non-insurance pay practices, because then the dentist and the team now have complete control over this is the care this patient needs. Even though insurance says I have to do these 15 steps first, no, let's just do this. I know this is what we need.
Yes, and so with that information in the early 2000s, what I did was I became hyper-focused on helping patients create a healthy biofilm, or what we used to call plaque. Because the science that was coming out was, to me, overwhelming in its understanding of why I had lost my impact and influence with patients. Because scaling and root planing is not going to put somebody with periodontal disease into remission. It may help a bit for short term, but long term, until you deal with the pathogens that are creating the infection and the inflammation, and until I was able to figure out what was living in people's biofilm, my hands were tied. I would continue to lose that impact and influence. So I can remember, I think it was in 2005 or 2006, I was at the Chicago Midwinter meeting when Dr. Tom Neighbors introduced oral DNA. Find out what those pathogens are in people's biofilm that are creating, help to create this infection and inflammation. And that went systemically. Those pathogens can create inflammation in the airway and in the tonsils and down into the stomach. Your gut microbiome is so important. And then I started using some a technology that had just come out about that same time by Dr. Kim Kuch. And he developed a system to help balance the biofilm. Now, we're not talking about saliva, we're talking about biofilm. So
This is the
he said
carefree.
carry-free system could help balance the biofilm. And so I was all over that to bring that into the practice and into our routine care. See, one of the differences between the way we approached patient care and a lot of offices do, when we found a technology that I believed in, it became part of the protocol. There was no such thing as offering periotherapy, say to somebody, a la carte. Like, well, if you want me to, I can do an oral DNA testing to see what pathogens are causing your problem. Nope. It wasn't a choice. It
We
was a
just do
part of
it.
our protocol.
Yeah.
And the problem is when you ask a hygienist, particularly to explain the benefit of something that you believe in, chairside, it'll all come down with the patient asking one question:
How much?
how much does it cost? And you see, then you are getting engaged in a conversation that's about cost and not outcomes.
And technically, it's still cost either way. I'd rephrase it. We're talking about financial cost versus health cost.
True.
A very different perspective. And if you're sitting here telling me, probably because I'm on the other side of this now, but sitting here saying, something that's now part of my regular visit is going to, maybe cost a little bit more, but it's going to gain me because I'm going to be healthier.
Right.
I lean that way now.
So, what I did with Dr. McKay is we raised the price of our therapy, say, if we're talking about periodontal therapy, to include those things that we believed in so that I didn't have to have those
That
kind of
uncomfortable
conversations
conversation,
with the patient chairside. So, when our treatment care coordinator presented periodontal therapy to a patient, they were shown what all was included in it, but it wasn't a choice. Well, I'll take this, but not that. There was no out choices. And I think that is so important. When you believe in something, don't have those cost versus outcome conversations with patients. Just make it the baseline of your care.
Because it's the right thing to do. You
It
just
is.
know
It is. And
this is one of those things that, I mean, I get kind of geeked out about this stuff at this point, but because of people like you and, Dr. Claire Staggs, I really put so much more value and have so much more respect for the entire dental world, which I didn't know growing up. Because everything that's happening in my body starts right here. Everything from the food that I eat, how I breathe, it's impacting my nervous system, my immune system. It's mind-blowing what we know now. And that's to me why what you're doing is so critical. And, kind of on that, as we go through this, you've mentored and influenced, an entire generation of hygienists at this point. So knowing all these amazing things that we know now that are coming out about oral health and how it impacts the body and these changes in dentistry, what do you want to see as this next wave of clinicians do differently?
Well, help them look at their care differently. and really realized that every time there was a is a patient sitting in your chair, imagine this is someone that you love dearly, and how would you like them taken care of? And be that care that you want for your loved ones, and share that, be compassionate enough to share that love, because you know there are many people that love that patient in your chair and want the best for their loved one.
I like that. And one of the
And
things I often hear you say is to follow the science.
exactly. Your science, the science will take you there of what you need to be doing differently. And reach out, get a mentor, find somebody that's already doing this type of care. I'm not the only one. I may have a little different spin on how I manage to take great care of people. You know, most people talk about when they look and they evaluate a hygiene department and their level of care or their level of health and wellness in the practice, they look at their perio percentage numbers. And most hygiene departments have a hygiene perio ratio of maybe 10 to 14%. And in my practice, my perio percentage ratio, which is the percentage of periodontal involved codes in relationship to a prophy, which is a preventative procedure, my perio percentage number averaged monthly between 78 and 82%. And I don't know of too many more hygienists that have that kind of ratio. And I'm not bragging about it, but it's okay to talk about it when you're doing it. And you can show how, in the background of that percentage, how other people can get there too. So that's important to me because it literally changed the course of my life and the course of our patients' lives when, you can have these kind of conversations and make this kind of change in patients.
I
So.
like that. So as we start to wrap up, I'm gonna turn the table back on you a little bit and make you talk about yourself, which as I know you, I know that's not something you like to do, but we're going to do it because I really want to talk about your legacy that you're leaving, specifically what you've done in this last 25 years, and you still keep going every day. There's something driving you. So let's just start with what do you hope people say about your impact 25 years from now?
Well, I hope they think that I help them make life-saving screenings non-negotiable. To me, that is the purpose of a hygiene visit, is to be able to identify those risk factors and then manage those risk factors so they aren't in play in whether or not a patient lives a long and healthy life. And I would love to be known for bringing compassion back into care. You know, there's the Dalai Lama had made a comment about compassion, and he said, whether you're young or old, rich or poor, there are times in your life when you need help from others. And he says, when you can give that kind of help to others in a compassionate way, in a loving way, in a way that benefits whoever it is that needs that help, that's compassion. And there is a benefactor from North Dakota that heard that quote by the Dalai Lama, and he donated $100 million to UC San Diego. and it couldn't be used for cancer research, HIV, Alzheimer's. Only thing it can be used for is to develop an institute of compassion. And this is what we are, what I'm talking about here is how to develop a compassionate way to take care of others. And I hope that could be my legacy, is that more people will get involved in taking great care of people, helping, truly helping.
Helping people, truly helping.
You see, there's only one word difference between empathy and compassion.
And that is.
Action. So you can have all kinds of empathy for people, but unless you take some action, that turns empathy into compassion. And that's what I want to be known for, is that I took being empathetic for others and I took action and turned it into compassion about saving lives.
Love that. And that really does sum up what you do. So, for those that don't know, technically, I think you are retired, but I work with you every day. So, I know you're not retired. You're still out evangelizing and trying to build architects of change and help hygienists and dental professionals. What is it that drives you every day to still do this?
Well, I'm a woman of faith, and I believe in where my gifts have come from. And I have a responsibility to share those gifts and to not leave this earth with even one arrow left in my quiver of gifts. So I'm out there trying to multiply the gifts that God has given me and help others do the same. There's a great book out. It's called The Last Arrow by Erwin McManus. And he talks about not leaving this earth until you share your gifts. Share all of them. So.
And I'll make sure that's the show notes too. And having read that, because Chris referred me to it, I highly recommend it. It's a great book. So, last question I have for you. If you had to describe your journey in one word, what would it be?
Oh boy. Transformational.
Why?
Well, it just created such change in me with Dr. McKay giving me that challenge and having a belief in my potential. You know, he said to me 25 years ago, all I want you to do is grow. And that took a lot of the pressure and whatever off of me. And I knew that he would walk along beside me and help me whenever I needed it. But this was my whatever to bear. I had to figure this out. And I think that when you do that, when you decide, well, and also when you have a worthwhile goal,
You're right. Yeah.
time becomes important. And for as a hygienist, you know, what we think about whenever somebody asks us to introduce something new into the time we have with the patient, we push back because we're so
Sure.
focused on removing tartar from people's teeth. But when I had a new goal of helping patients learn how to create health for themselves, and when I worked in transferring them from the danger zone into the safety zone, I had much more time on my hands. So I had time to do five or six life-saving screenings in the appointment, and they became the reason why I continued on with this is I so dearly because of my childhood experiences, wanted to save other people's lives. So I didn't play a part in the sadness and grief of a family losing a family member because I didn't do something that could have impacted their life.
And that is part of what makes you uniquely you.
Yep.
So I want to just sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for trusting me enough to come on your show and take over for an episode and guide you through this conversation. You are, as you know, one of my favorite people on the planet, and I love your mission. And just thank you for letting me be a part of it.
Oh, you did a great job. Thank you. You made this easy for me because I'm not used to talking about myself. So
I know. I know. And you did great.
thank you. Thank you so much, Rebecca. That's it for today's episode of Health Lifelines, brought to you by the Lifeguard Approach. I hope you found inspiration and actionable insights to support you and your patients' journeys towards better health and more fulfilling lives. Remember, every small step you take today builds the foundation for a healthier tomorrow. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and share the podcast with someone who could benefit from it. Your support helps us reach more listeners and grow this community of health-conscious individuals and dental professionals focused on becoming lifeguards for their patients. For more tips, tools, and resources from the Lifeguard Approach, visit us online at thelifeguardapproach.com. Also, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn at The Lifeguard Approach. Thank you for tuning in. Until next time, stay informed, stay inspired, and keep showing up as a lifeguard for your patients at every single appointment.